Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to On Brand with Alf and me, Rory Sutherland. Each month I'll be talking to household names as well as challenger brands about success, challenges and future opportunities in the advertising, marketing and media industries. And today I'm joined by one of those very challengers, and it's in the shape of Nicola Hamilton, Senior Director of Brand and Communications at GoCardless. Launched in 2011, GoCardless is a fintech on a mission to help businesses collect payments quickly, easily, and securely. Recently, the payments firm announced it's raised £230 million, giving it a valuation of £1.55 billion, which is comfortably within the realms of unicorn status. As GoCardless advances its product and geographical expansion plans, I think this is a perfect moment to welcome Nicola to the podcast. So I understand you've been in fintech for about 11 years, specifically fintech marketing. Is that right? Where were you before that?
So I was at a company called Finastra previously, which was definitely fintech, a bigger organization, but dealing more with banks. But for my sins, Rory, I have been in B2B marketing for a number of decades, and specifically fintech, I think, it's well over 15 years, so quite a long time.
Well, fantastic. And what attracted you to GoCardless when you first discovered it? Because you've been there more or less from the offset, have you?
No. So I joined, not quite. So GoCardless was founded, as you said, was founded in 2011, and I joined in 2019. So I've been there about 3.5 years. And the reason why I found it interesting was, one, because it's a UK fintech. Obviously, when you look at a lot of technology companies, they are US companies. I've worked for a lot of US-based companies previously. So the fact that it was UK, and also for me particularly, how much it helps smaller businesses was really something that was attractive. Having worked in a number of companies that were very much focused on the banking side and where the banks were the clients, seeing that more correlation, immediately seeing the benefits of helping smaller businesses. We're not just small business focused. We work with companies from very small businesses all the way up to kind of multinational, much, much larger companies. But it was that aspect that particularly attracted me to the company.
So particularly it gives a chance to sort of level the playing field between small businesses and large businesses in being able to take, first of all, not necessarily credit card payments, hence cardless, I guess.
Absolutely. Yes. As it says in the name, you'd be amazed how much confusion. Sometimes people do still think that we do card payments, and it's like, no, it really clearly is what it says on the tin. It's GoCardless. So yes, it's looking at those different and, quite frankly, better ways for businesses to get paid.
So, I mean, in a sense, it was always a bit of a tragedy that the internet didn't come with its own micropayments or small payments mechanism from the beginning. And so the credit card, which was never really designed for that purpose, I think it's fair to say, or was never designed in anticipation of that kind of use, has been a kind of, if you'd like, a sort of default fallback option for anybody wishing to make money over the web. And your argument is that direct bank payments, both for one-off and recurring payments, and equally important, top-up payments, if that's right.
Yes.
This is a much more economical, secure and efficient way to do it.
Precisely. And it's when you look at, so it's not just card payments, but I think, and probably if I go back to where Go Cardless started from, so really for the first decade, Go Cardless has been focused on those recurring payments. So subscriptions, installments, regular invoices, and looking at a better way that, that companies can get paid for those. And direct debit was really the solution. That it was a perfect solution. It's been around for a very long time, but even, you know, even when Go Cardless was set up, it wasn't really accessible to smaller businesses. It was, so if you think about it, you know, myself and I'm sure many other people for years have paid your utility bills using direct debit, but it wasn't something back then that was easily available to other businesses.
And you can understand that, because I suppose banks would have been uncomfortable giving too wide a range of institutions the facility just to request and receive money from other accounts, presumably.
And also the fact of just the volume of payments. So, you know, when you look at the big utility companies, they've got a huge volume of payments. So that makes sense for a bank to kind of to offer that. And that's one of the things that Go Cardless did, was really look at that and say, we've got this fantastic payment rail. It's proven. It's reliable. Let's bring it online. Because if you remember also, it used to be when you were setting up a direct debit, you'd have lots of paper forms that you had to fill in to kind of get your mandate in place.
That's right.
So it's about digitizing that, bringing that whole process online, opening up, making it accessible for many, you know, just a much larger range of companies to be able to use that. And I think part of it is the fact that, and exactly as you said, you know, traditional payment methods, cards, they've been around for 5, 6, 7 decades now, but they weren't, you know, they were designed for a different kind of world of making payments and not really online. And what people have done is just taken what they're used to, it shifted online, but there's still lots of issues, you know, not just the high card fees that people are paying to make those transactions, but just being a, you know, everything involved in late payments, for example, which is an endemic problem for lots of smaller businesses, but for larger businesses as well. So being able to pull those payments directly from a bank account so you don't have to chase them up is a huge kind of time and cost saving for businesses as well.
Yeah, so if someone misses a payment for whatever reason, effectively catching up on the missed payment within that framework is just really, really difficult, is it? For a smaller business.
Exactly. For a smaller business, it is. And they spend, you know, founders of business owners spend a disproportionate amount of time calling customers, chasing customers, tracking down late payments. Whereas when it's set up to be automatically pulled and they can just pull that from a customer's bank account, it's so much easier. That it's all automated. And I think that's the key, that the process is all automated. And then if a payment fails for whatever reason, then we have new products that we've done, because our premise is all to be better than direct debit. And now we're moving beyond direct debit with other types of payments as well. But just to be able to make that process a whole lot smoother for businesses. So, you know, for lots of businesses, payments fail for whatever reason. Maybe a card has expired, a customer hasn't updated the details in their account, and it's really, and then they have to go into a process of, do they spend the time, effort and money chasing those failed payments, which sometimes can cost them more than the value of the payment itself? Or do they start to write
it? It can happen with credit cards simply because the card expires. Because, you know, from the consumer viewpoint, you have that very annoying thing. If you have a card that's nearing expiration, then you then end up getting sort of, you know, 12 emails from various people demanding that you update your details, which is, you know, a whole heap of bureaucracy you could do without, certainly. It's also, I think, presumably here, you'll get an email or some other form of notification every time a payment goes out. Is that right?
That's correct. So, for example, I have a couple of payments that I make through Go Cardless. One is my pet insurance. And before that goes out, I get an email notification that lets them know that that payment is due to go out of my bank account.
Because I think there's something fundamentally unethical and actually problematic in both directions, the business and the consumer, both about direct debit and recurring credit card payments, which is, in the case of recurring credit card payments, finding out how to cancel them. You can cancel, typically you can cancel a direct debit on your online bank. The downside of the direct debit is that you aren't really notified of the payments in any other form other than going onto your credit card statement or whatever and checking the amount. You can at least cancel it. I acknowledge that one benefit. And that's obviously the direct debit guarantee that you can cancel it at any time you want. But then the credit card payment, in theory, you can cancel it any time you like, but there's an awful lot of sludge. Now, what worries me about this is that there are a lot of businesses which are being created around the idea of subscription. But if there's no transparency or real consumer control around subscription, I think consumers are going to reach a subscription ceiling where they basically just see anything that involves a recurring payment and go, no, I've got enough of these. I'm fundamentally losing control of my finances because, you know, every time I get paid, half my salary then disappears in various recurring payments. I'm no longer happy with this loss of control, or, you know, the number of times I've probably ended up subscribing to something on a credit card for, you know, 5 years longer than I needed it simply because I had no idea what the notional pay on the credit card payment meant. And I wasn't sure if, you know, if I were to cancel it, which would be almost impossible, by the way, because you can't cancel a recurring payment through your credit card company, I think, if I'm right. You have to go to the original.
Yes, I believe you would have to go to the person that you set up the subscription with.
And they're not going to make it easy. And, you know, in fairness to direct debit, you can actually just say to your bank, no longer, end of it. Okay, I don't know what this is, cancel it, which sometimes means it's your motor insurance, by the way. I mean, the whole process is kind of terrifying. And both of those alternatives are highly unsatisfactory. And my worry is that perfectly worthwhile businesses, which are hoping to promote the subscription model in some shape or form, simply won't get off the ground because of consumer reluctance. And what you have is something which actually solves both those problems. It's both transparent about the payments you're making, and it makes it presumably very easy to cancel.
Yes, as you said, if you're doing those payments through direct debit, then in the UK you have the direct debit guarantee, and that makes it easy for you to be able to cancel those payments, and have that transparency, which is, as you say, is the main thing, because then you can see that in your bank account in terms of those payments that are going out on a regular basis, and kind of keep an eye on them, which is beneficial.
Yeah, because I think one of the things I worry about, both with e-tail and with any model which involves subscription, which of course is quite a lot of, I mean, an awful lot of media models depend on subscription, is whether at the level of the individual consumer, there's a mental ceiling of how many of these things I'm prepared to have. In the same way with e-tail, you know, there's a limit to how many deliveries you can cope with per week before you turn into a kind of unpaid logistics officer. And with payments, you know, there's a limit to the number of recurring payments you can mentally cope with before you feel that actually it's kind of open season on your current account. it's something that, I mean, by the way, the low friction question is also fantastic, because I noticed on your website that, you know, any time you send an invoice, there's a button which effectively says, pay it now.
Yes, yes.
You know, now, the number of times I've received emails saying, you owe us money for this, and it's 5 minutes work, or, of course, what might happen with smaller businesses is they revert to paper communications, and to be honest, Kenneth, I have no idea where my checkbook is. Okay, so that, you know, that's almost got to the point where actually demanding someone pays you by check is pretty much dead in the water.
Exactly. If I look at my checkbook, I mean, I'm not sure when the date of the last check that I wrote is. It's in my drawer next to me, but it's probably quite a few years ago. But yes, obviously we have a lot of end consumers who pay via Go Cardless. Our customers are businesses who decide to collect their payments through Go Cardless. But exactly that point that you said through those invoices, and particularly, again, direct debit is very useful for those regular invoices. So if you are a business with a supplier who you are regularly sending invoices to, you can set them up so that those invoices are paid through direct debit. or through open banking, which is now making all sorts of payment by bank a lot easier. You can add a pay link so that you can literally just click it and take that payment directly out of your bank account. So it's all about using your bank account as the payment method, as opposed to a card or a check or something else.
There are a few behavioural obstacles I can see you have to overcome, one of which is that people sometimes like having a credit card as a buffer between the outside world and their current account. You see what I mean?
Which, yes.
In other words, it's kind of, you know, I can understand that, you know, the terror would be, you know, there's a limit to how much someone can charge your credit card, whereas potentially in your current account, the amount that fraud could cost you is more or less limitless. And the other one is just simple things like, do people memorize their bank accounts? Whereas, is there autofill for your current account in the same way there is for credit cards when you pay online? Are those obstacles you've encountered, or
not in the way that we are set up? Because I guess when we're not the same as a credit card in terms of that kind of point of sale transaction. So it's definitely online. When you are using direct debit to set up that that payment, you do it as a one-off, and then it becomes that recurring kind of connection. And then the other ways that you do it using open banking is if you, and this could be whether you're scanning a QR code or the link, just you just literally get linked directly to your bank account. You don't have to fill in your details because it's all done online through open banking. So you're literally being connected directly to your bank account, which you authorize. Say using your fingerprint or facial recognition, that sort of thing. So that level of security is there because you're verifying who you are in terms of saying that you own that bank account, because you have those layers of security that are connecting you to it.
I see. So I missed this. It's a real world solution as much as it's an online solution, in fact, is it?
It's not something where you would go into a shop, for example, and make a payment using GoCardless. Yeah, we're not set up, we're not at that kind of point of sale transaction. But if you were looking for, you know, looking to pay for something online and the business was offering GoCardless as a payment solution, you would have that option there to pay via GoCardless. And that could be a pay link, as I say, that then can connect you to your bank account. But it is very much, it tends to be at the moment very much more for those recurring transactions. And the place where we would see predominantly those more one-off transactions is where you have that link in an invoice, for example.
Or yes,
where you already have, I think a good example of this is, say, if you have a gym membership. Say you have a gym membership, you sign up, you're paying for that on a recurring basis, so you have the direct debit, but you want to pay for a personal trainer. What you can do is you can use that. That's for those top-up payments. So they can say you can then use that as an instant authorization for that transaction, and it goes through. So then using all of your details already, but it's just it's kind of something that you're adding on to your already agreed monthly transaction.
I mean, that would apply to, I mean, pension payments. It's always struck me as utterly insane that whenever my pension company communicates to me, they never give me an opportunity to top up my pension. It's always struck me as like one of the most bizarro kind of failures to encourage people to save more. And I've never made sense of it entirely because, you know, I've asked large audiences of people, if you had a windfall of X thousand pounds, would any of you think of putting some of it in your pension? And most of them go, never occurred to me, which is kind of weird because for many people, it would be by far the most tax efficient, sensible thing to do. I mean, it is worth noting that an awful lot of what you might call credit chasing is not really down to the person being unable or unwilling to pay, but down to the simple fact that the act of payment is just too damn difficult.
Oh, yes. So I think what you're probably referring to is that kind of payment success. So in terms of kind of over 95% of payments going through the first time. And a lot of this comes down to the fact that, as we said before, credit card details can expire, which is why sometimes, you know, if you have that recurring payment going through, but it's on a card, then what can happen is if that expires, then obviously that payment fails and that payment is missed. Whereas your bank account details, but let's face it, very few of us change our bank account over our lifetime. We may have a couple of bank accounts these days, but those bank account details don't expire. So there's a lot more success rate. The times when they do expire is if you don't have the funds in your bank account for when that transaction is due to go out. And we have a tool now that is called Success Plus, but which helps chase up those failed payments so that you can take them out of the bank and you can retry that payment basically when it is more likely that there are going to be funds in the account.
Ah, interesting. So it's a sort of snooze button for a payment, effectively.
Almost. And what happens, or what's traditionally happened with the direct debit payment, for example, is that the merchant would just retry that payment. There are fees for retrying those payments, which can be quite high. And if the payment fails and you just retry it, the chances are that the funds still aren't going to be in the bank account. So you'll get another payment failure that comes through. But because we have $30 billion worth of transactions flowing through Go Cardless on an annual basis. So we're using machine learning to indicate the best time to take out payments. If you're going to retry a payment, when the best time to do that will be. And what we're finding is we're getting a 70% success rate on those failed payments of the retries, which again is an added benefit of Go Cardless to say, we can help you with those payments that do fail. We can help you make sure that you are getting a higher success rate on all of your payments. So as I say, it's using those proven payment rails that have been in place, but just making them better and improving them using innovation and technology so that we're just helping businesses collect more of their money on time and that they're having visibility over that and when it's coming in.
So even with a small business, you kind of nudge them to say, don't try taking payment again tomorrow. Do it in X days time.
Yeah. So if they're using that feature, it advises them when to do it and means that those payments are coming through. And again, it means that either, you know, they're recovering those payments, they're not having to chase them because it's all done automatically. So it's taking that stress away from them. And it means that they're not writing down a whole bunch of failed payments as bad debt, which is what a lot of businesses would have done previously because the time they would have had to invest to chase up those payments just would have been too much for them. So it's almost that cost of doing,
of course.
Was seen as a cost of doing business. And what we're saying is it shouldn't be a cost of doing business because there are ways and means of making sure that you can collect those payments and collect them successfully.
And you might expect a large utility to discover that, but there's no way you'd expect a small business independently to discover that kind of lesson.
Exactly.
But it's really, really important, I can see. Because, yes, it is. When you think about it, I mean, if there are two failed payments 2 weeks or 3 weeks apart, it's much more indicative of a problem than if they're two failed payments a day apart.
Exactly.
This is absolutely fascinating. I mean, presumably there's some degree of B2C marketing involved, or at least advice over how your immediate customers deploy this.
Yes. So when you look at the market kind of marketing that we do as and that I'm involved in is Go Cardless, it's predominantly B2B because our customers are businesses.
But
you're right in the fact that we are a B2B2C company because the end customers, our customers' customers, are people who are paying using Go Cardless, and you know, a large majority of those are end consumers. In fact, for the first time, we mentioned earlier how long I have been in the fintech and the B2B space. For the very first time when I was joining Go Cardless, I had friends who actually knew who the company was because they use Go Cardless to pay for things. That's probably a first time in my career because normally nobody has a clue who I work for. But so there is that very much that awareness at the consumer level. because people are used to paying it. It's quite visible in terms of the system, and lots of people absolutely loved it. In terms of, you know, before I joined, they were singing the company's praises because it made it so much easier for them to pay for things like children's gymnastics club membership or swim club membership, those sorts of things. So at that level, there really is that kind of consumer awareness of Go Cardless. But that being said, our focus in terms of our marketing strategy is we are very focused on targeting businesses to tell them about the benefits of paying via Go Cardless, how they can save time and money, retain customers, etc., by looking at a different payment method. So we are very much targeting businesses and getting them onto the platform to sign up and then activate and start processing payments through us.
And that presumably that's the sort of CFO and chief operations officer at the one hand, and on the other hand it's actually coders and software engineers who have presumably pretty strong recommendation power, I would guess.
Exactly. So we've got a very broad audience. So we serve from micro businesses, which could be, you know, we have a fantastic window cleaner. I think you can find him on YouTube, who only accepts Go Cardless payments and sings our praises. So we have very small businesses who use us, all the way up to larger kind of corporate businesses. And in the larger businesses, you're right, it's the head of payments, head of billing, potentially the chief product officer, who are looking at how they can integrate Go Cardless into their payments infrastructure, because they may be accepting a number of different types of payments. And I think one of the advantages that we have is we have lots of partnerships as well in terms of integrating with the systems that businesses already use. So companies can...
Oh, so accounting software and...
Absolutely. Yeah. Billing and revenue software, accounting software, or even specific partnerships in industry sectors. So again, in the health and well-being sector, there are companies that we partner with who provide all sorts of software for gyms, for example. And we integrate with them so that they can offer Go Cardless as a payment option. So that partner ecosystem is hugely important, because for any business, it's about what's the simplest way for them to be able to use us. So they can use us through that partner integration, or they can use us directly on our dashboard and platform.
Ah, got it. Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, this is actually, I agree with you. I can see your motivation, because this is hugely important for not just facilitating, you're actually enabling forms of commerce that previously would find it either difficult to function or couldn't exist.
Exactly, and I think...
A window cleaner makes perfect sense, because it's usually a recurring payment, for example.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, just those businesses who... we did a campaign about 12 or 18 months ago, which we called Awkward Conversations, because one of the things is, you know, people don't like having to have those conversations about money with their customers. So if you're chasing customers for money... you need to ask people for money. It's a really awkward conversation. And by enabling people, automating those payments, enabling people to pay in this way, it means that you can, you know, you don't have to spend so much time having those awkward conversations.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow!
Nice.
Yeah. What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Top two challenges, brought to you by ALF Insight.
ALF Insight helps media owners, agencies and marketing service providers improve their new business pipelines by equipping them with in-depth insights, accurate information and daily news updates on the leading and challenger brands in the UK. ALF now also helps sports clubs, venues and charities win new partnership deals. ALF Insight identifies the brands to target at the right time, providing everything you need to tailor the perfect pitch. Visit ALF Insight, that's alfinsight.com, or click the link in the episode description to find out more. We have the two challenges, which is a recurring feature of the program. The first question is, what would you say is the biggest challenge for Go Carbless? What's the kind of the hurdle you most need to overcome, or the constraint that you would most like released in order to grow at a greater rate?
So I was having a think about this one, because fortunately you didn't spring this on me as a surprise, these two challenges.
No,
So I have had a think about it. I think the biggest one for Go Cardless is inertia. Because when, you know, we've talked about the proposition that we have for businesses, we have this amazing proposition of faster, cheaper, more secure payments that help businesses save money, save time, retain customers. And I think that the challenge is that, as I mentioned before, lots of businesses don't think that they have a problem with payments because they are used to a certain way of doing things. So
yes,
they're used to having to chase late payments. They are used to paying extortionate card fees. They're used to writing off failed payments as bad debt. It's seen as a part of doing business rather than something that they don't have to put up with. So I think it's that inertia, which is probably the biggest challenge in getting companies to recognize that they do have a problem with payments and that there is a better way of taking them. So if I can give you an example of some of the savings, for example, I've chosen this example because I love the name of the company. It's an independent coffee roaster based in London. They're called Perky Blenders, which I just love the name.
Oh yes, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, well, great, fantastic coffee. So they've got four coffee shops. They have an online subscription business and a wholesale business. And by using Go Cardless, they've saved £20,000 in admin costs by automating their payment collection. And for the two founders, they're saving 2 days a month in time of So when you think of that, so Perky Blenders is a, you know, is a small business. That's just huge. So if you think of that potential that we have to save businesses of all sizes, you know, time, money, etc., it's that inertia. And that's part a big part of my job is to beat that drum and drive that awareness about what we can deliver.
The second challenge, by the way, is effectively what do you see as the pressing challenges for the fintech industry as a whole? What are the headwinds, if you like?
So I think at the moment, it really is that macroeconomic environment and the impact that that is having on funding costs and growth. So it's interesting. I was, you know, maybe even if you look 12 months ago, there were funding announcements coming out pretty much every week about companies who just got their latest round of funding, etc. That funding is not going to be as easy to come by. And when you look at where the, you know, and not just fintech, but all of the kind of the startup and the tech industry, it's been fueled by growth. That's what investors have been looking for. So they've been able to raise the funding on the back of their growth potential. We've been looking at that high growth from companies. But now that we're in a very different macroeconomic environment, it means that companies need to start prioritizing profitability over growth, because the runway that they've got in terms of funding is going to run out at some point, and that funding is not necessarily going to be as readily available. And I think, you know, we can see that in action with all of the layoffs that we've been seeing in the fintech and the tech industry. So you could, there's been this complete shift from kind of super high growth into now looking at profitability. It's a big shift in mindset for companies to make that shift. It's going to be painful in some ways. They've got to look at different ways of doing business. And when you look at a lot of these organizations, it's, you know, many of the people who founded these companies have only experienced those kind of boom times. So the situation that we're in now with high interest rates, high inflation, it's a very different macroeconomic environment. So I think that is a current really pressing challenge for the fintech industry. I think that we need continued government support for that. You know, when you look at the UK, London in particular, it's been a really attractive hub for fintech in particular. It's meant that we've got this really vibrant fintech industry.
Oh, it's fantastic,
which is fantastic. It's attracted the talent that we need to grow and innovate. There's a lot of fintechs that are going through that journey together, that are leaning on each other, that are learning from each other and collaborating together, using each other's services. But to keep that real ecosystem developing, you need that infrastructure, you need the regulation, you need the government support. And I know something that we signed as Go Cardless, a letter recently kind of really urging the renewal of the enterprise investment schemes and the venture capital trusts that have been really essential to that system. And Jeremy Hunt back in November said that he was going to look at renewing those, but nothing's happened. There's uncertainty around it. And that uncertainty is going to also impact the ability to fundraise. You know, if you don't know what the tax system is going to be, what sort of incentives you have in place, it's going to make that ability to fundraise even more difficult. So I think there's a combination of factors which I would kind of package as the macroeconomic environment, which I think are going to cause those challenges.
I mean, you have one great advantage, I imagine, which is that all businesses are too slow to innovate in payment. I mean, you know, fast food restaurants were ludicrously slow in accepting credit cards, for instance, just as they were very slow in installing, I think, screens for ordering. I think you have one great strength, which is that once people sign up with you, they're going to stay.
We are very sticky.
In other words, very, very sticky indeed. Yeah, I can see that. So, you know, I think one of the things that investors don't distinguish enough for, partly just because stickiness is a bit harder and slower to measure than growth, okay, is there are quite a lot of companies which grow quite slowly at first, but their real distinguishing characteristic is that, you know, once driven, forever smitten, as it were.
Yes.
Okay. You know, they actually create converts rather than dabblers and, you know, occasional experimenters. So I think in that respect, you have an absolute strength. And I think it's the thing we often fail to measure, which is we can have a load of debates about this company and its finances, but the fundamental question is, do people who use it, and that's both consumers and both consumers who use it, do they use it again? And businesses who use it, do they keep using it and indeed drive more of their customers to use it?
Exactly.
And once you can answer those questions, actually, everything else is secondary.
Yes.
So you suffer from the fact that what you remove is, first of all, an assumed cost, which is just, well, the credit card companies have always taken X percent.
Yeah.
We just have to live with it. So that's becoming, it's a bit like pay-as-you-earn taxation. You know, you don't even get to see the money in the first place, so you're not aware of how much you're losing.
Exactly.
And the second one, of course, is a huge time cost. And it's very, very easy to fail to notice that because you've just assumed that's just a cost of doing business. And both those things, in fact, can be removable at one stroke.
Exactly. And particularly if you think about that in the current climate with the whole cost of living crisis, the squeeze on businesses from, you know, companies are just recovering from all of the COVID pandemic. They're now getting squeezed by the whole macroeconomic climate. How can you just, you know, take some of that cost and stress out of a business immediately, and that's something that we can provide. But again, it's getting companies to understand that there is a solution, to be aware that, you know, obviously there are lots of organizations who are looking at their payments, who recognize that there is something that can be done. But if you look at the, just in the UK, at the number of businesses, given that we've got just over 75,000, it's the tip of the iceberg. So it's really that inertia and getting companies to recognize that there is a better way to do things. I think that that is one of our biggest challenges.
And so what are what's your general growth pattern? You mentioned billions going through already.
Yeah.
What is your growth rate? And also, what are your expansion plans geographically? I mean, bizarrely, Germany, if I'm right, kind of worked this way anyway, didn't it? Because so many Germans had a kind of absolute pathological horror of credit cards that if you bought a Ryanair flight on the German website, you'd effectively pay in a kind of go-cardless system. I think Holland might have been similar, actually.
So
those are two countries which have a weird credit card a phobia.
So, yeah. So the Netherlands has a system called Ideal, which is very much this kind of much more kind of bank payment system that was set up. The difference in Germany is direct debit was something that was very much available to businesses already. So that where in the UK it wasn't accessible to all businesses, that was different in Germany. But we do have a lot of customers in Germany because, again, it's all of those additional benefits that we provide above and beyond just kind of the payment mechanism, which makes it valuable from that point of view and looking at that kind of total cost of ownership. But in terms of where we are as a business, so we have more than 75,000 businesses who use, I think it's about 80,000 today, who use GoCardless to collect their payments. That the vast majority, that's predominantly UK, but we are growing internationally. So we have a presence in the US, in Australia, in France, where we're kind of actively have kind of sales in those areas. But we...
Yes. Are there regulatory hurdles to be cleared for each market? Or
yes, definitely. So
presumably there are, yeah.
And it depends on the payment rails that you use. So in the UK, we use BACS for the direct debit payments and faster payments for open banking. In Europe, it is SEPA, which we use. In the US, we use a system which is ACH. It's the ACH pull mechanism. And yes, you have to, you know, obviously we're a payments company. We sit within the flow of funds because funds flow into GoCardless before we pay them out to the merchants. So we are very highly regulated, and you have to make sure that we meet all of the regulatory requirements in each region within which we operate. But we enable payments across more than 30 countries. So a business can use GoCardless. So if you were a business in the UK, but you have customers in Europe, you can use GoCardless to collect those payments, and you don't need to have a bank account in Europe because we partner
with... In the UK?
Yes. You can collect those payments and have them settled within your UK bank account because we've partnered with Wise to be able to do that FX transaction. So that's really...
And that's the worldwide version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's really important, particularly if you're a growing, scaling business. You've got customers. So we have people, if I think of a good example, so DocuSign, for example, you know, the automated signing documents online, they use us to collect payments across a number of countries. They're online subscriptions for businesses because they can use us to collect those from, payments across a number of different geographies.
Do you have magazine subscriptions as well? Or
yes, we do. So media is a good example. So The Guardian, for example. So The Guardian uses GoCardless to collect payments. So that's one of the newspaper subscriptions. But yes, media, again, where you've got those recurring payments is a really good kind of use case for using GoCardless and being able to collect those, particularly where they've got, you know, they may have readership from other countries where they want to collect those payments, and they can do that using the GoCardless system.
Is it sometimes offered alongside a credit card option, or is it generally the only option?
It depends. I would say for most companies, they want to provide choice to their customers. So they will offer a number of different different payment options. Then there are some businesses where they would see the benefit and want to kind of push the maximum of payments through Go Cardless for a number of reasons. But I think it depends on the merchant and the payment options that they want to offer. I think, you know, we've done some studies into payment preference, and there is a lot of preference for direct debit, for bank-to-bank payments. As you can imagine, in the US, cards comes out pretty much on top because it's a big kind of credit card culture in the US. So that's something that for many things, that's an interesting challenge for us to be able to position ourselves to say that for many, many different types of businesses, that actually using the ACH pull mechanism or bank payments is just much more beneficial. But obviously we have that culture that we have to measure up against.
But I mean, the UK had that culture to a degree, not to the same extent as the US, and you've clearly succeeded there.
Yes.
So there's patently a need for it.
Interestingly, what we find is that the younger generations are shunning credit cards much more for other forms of payment. I know you had Klarna on your podcast recently talking about the whole buy now, pay later. And obviously that has really taken off, I think, in the kind of the younger generations to use. Then they're favouring kind of much more different ways of paying for things, and not necessarily on credit cards. So you do see that generational shift in terms of the different types of payments as well.
I mean, I suppose one consideration is whether you offer a similar credit arrangement yourself, because I mean, I know one of the logic of Klarna to some extent is that you have a company that can effectively borrow money at 4.5% or 3.8%. Selling to people who can only buy on credit or would prefer to buy on credit but have to pay 22.5% APR. So the argument is it's much more sensible for the company to borrow the money and effectively lend it to the consumer than it is to drive the consumer to a credit card solution. And so I suppose you must have contemplated that you could build in a kind of deferred payment, pay in three, or similar models into what you offer.
We don't do that at the moment. It's not something that's on our roadmap. But interestingly, we do partner with some of the buy now, pay later providers who use Go Cardless to collect those payments. So Klarna uses Go Cardless, for example, particularly in the US. And we offer that we are one of the payment methods that can be used for buy now, pay later, but we don't offer that ourselves.
Which media channels do you favour? I mean, do you use a mixture of kind of, obviously, it's a face-to-face sale ultimately, I guess, is it?
It's kind of both, not necessarily. So it's very easy to sign up for Go Cardless online. And for a lot of business, it's about getting them onto the platform. And so you don't necessarily need to have a face-to-face sales conversation to do that. It's about getting people to sign up and start collecting payments. As you get into larger businesses who may be, you know, looking at RFPs for payment systems, they're going through a bigger process, then that's, and also where they are looking to commit to a number of transactions and potentially looking at volume pricing, etc. Obviously, that's where you go into a sales conversation. So it depends on that. But for smaller businesses, it's a straightforward get online either through, you know, your Xero, Sage, QuickBooks, etc. We have integrations there where it's about coming straight online to kind of use Go Cardless or just sign up on our website and be able to start using the platform immediately.
And possibly a third hurdle, which I suspect is often a psychological issue with people of a very logical financial mindset, is they would tend to see offering more choice as a cost and would fail to notice the very, very positive effect it has on sales uplift. That I think two mistakes that, for example, a lot of online businesses make is they don't give you a wide enough choice of how to pay, and they don't give you a wide enough choice of who delivers the goods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, you have now paid us some money, and we will now choose entirely to our own, in our own interests, the person, the courier who will deliver this thing. And of course, each individual customer has couriers which in their area are brilliant and couriers which in their area are terrible. There are many people who prefer things delivered by Royal Mail, but they're not allowed to request that. And so the extent to which allowing people to buy the same thing in different ways doesn't cannibalize, it's actually much more incremental than most logical people think.
Exactly.
Yeah, a very boring finance person would tend to go, what's the point of McDonald's opening a drive-through lane? All it means now is we're selling to the same people in two different ways. Actually, you know, I don't know what percentage, but probably 50% of the drive-through lane business, or certainly 20 or 30, is incremental. Had there not been a drive-through lane, they wouldn't have bought anything at all. And I think that's one of the widest mistakes, which is people focus on one optimal solution, failing to realise that actually a range of solutions from which the consumer can choose will always win, ultimately.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a very, very finance person's, the fear of kind of, you know, effectively what they call cannibalisation is, I think, an irrationally exaggerated fear.
And I agree with you. I think, you know, customer choice and customer preference is what we should be looking at as well. And people definitely have a preference for how they want to pay for things. And I think it's about making that payment method as frictionless and easy and convenient as possible, because that's what everybody's looking for these days. You know, I received an invoice for something recently, and it was kind of the bank details were in this very faint stamp on the paper invoice. And then, so once I had to obviously get my glasses on, could actually read it. And then I had to go up and, you know, and the invoice came in the post. It was like, really? You have my email address? Send me an email address with a pay link on it, and I can just click it and literally have it done within 5 seconds. But it took me, you know, the time to be able to sit there and then do the manual bank transfer myself. It's about making it as easy to pay as possible. Or the other option, I think, was picking up the phone to them to give them my card details. That's not what I want to do. I want to do something really quick and easy. And I think giving that choice to consumers is really, really, really important.
Particularly as I don't know if you've noticed the thing, but with sort of two-factor authentication and goodness knows what else, the business of using a credit card online is now, you know, 70% more painful than it was a couple of years ago.
Absolutely. SCA, the strong customer authentication, which I agree with in the principle of making the payments more secure, but it adds a whole ton of friction to that process. In fact, when it first came in, I remember trying to pay for car parking, and I had to send off for a one-time passcode. And it literally, fortunately, I had some money in my purse, which I just don't have cash anymore these days. But I ended up just abandoning the online kind of payment, going to the and paying with the cash machine. The one-time passcode turned up, I think it was about 30 minutes later.
Yeah, absolutely. You're standing in the rain and there's no mobile reception.
Yep.
And you're supposed to park the damn car.
Exactly.
It's utter absurdity.
I agree.
Mobile, don't even get into mobile car charging, because that's a whole... That's also a whole interesting area for you to explore, by the way, because it's widely terrible, because...
Don't get me on the topic of electric car. I am the proud electric car driver, but oh my goodness, yes, the pain of
me too.
Have like every single different app in there if you go on a journey, and then setting up all the payment details is horrific.
Nicola, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Absolute pleasure.
It's a joy. This is a fantastic business, and I will be looking out to use your services as frequently as I can. I agree with you. I think it's actually of value, enormous economic value to smaller businesses in levelling the playing field. So, you've been listening to On Brand with Alf and Rory Sutherland. If you want to do business with Go Cardless or any financial brand, contact the Alf Insight team on their website, which is www.alfinsight.com. That's www.alfinsight.com. You can also find the link in the episode description. This series is produced and expertly edited by Ultimate Sound and Vision. And to make sure you receive the next episode, please do subscribe. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, then tweak the algorithm a little bit by giving us a like. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.